On this third day of August 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 22, Elements of Material Creation, text number 43. Nityada Yanga Bhutani.
Nityada Yanga Bhutani.
Try it again. Nityada Yanga Bhutani.
Nityada Yanga Bhutani.
Bhavanti Nabhavanti Cha.
Kale na
laksha vegena.
Kale na laksha vegena.
Sukshmatvatana drishyate.
Sukshmatvatana drishyate.
Translation. My dear Uddhava, material bodies are constantly undergoing creation and destruction by the force of time, whose swiftness is imperceptible. But because of the subtle nature of time, no one can see this. There's no purport. I'll read the next one. Yata chisham srota sancha palanam va vanaspatehi tataiva sarvabhutanam vayovastadayakutaha. The different stages of transformation of all material bodies occur just like those of the flame of a candle, the current of a river, or the fruits of a tree. Report. The wavering flame of a candle sometimes waxes brightly and again becomes weak. Finally, it vanishes altogether. The waves of a flowing river rise and fall, creating innumerable shapes and patterns. The fruits of a tree gradually take birth, grow, ripen, sweeten, and eventually rot and die. Similarly, one can easily understand that one's body is undergoing constant transformation, and that the body is certainly subject to old age, disease, and death. At different times of life, the body exhibits degrees of sexual potency, physical strength, desire, wisdom, and so on. As the body grows old, physical strength diminishes, but one's knowledge may increase, even as the body undergoes such transformation. Material birth and death occur within the realm of segmented time. The birth, creation, or production of a material object immediately connects it with a segmented sequence of subtle time within the material world. Thus, its destruction or death is inevitable. The irresistible force of time moves so subtly that only the most intelligent can perceive it. Just as the candle flame gradually diminishes, as the flowing currents move within the river, or as fruits gradually ripen on a tree, the material body is steadily moving toward inevitable death. The temporary body should therefore never be confused with the eternal, unchanging spirit soul. Om jnana timarandasya jnanandana shalakaya chakshu unmilitam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance to him and all members of Sri Parampara. So this is a very wonderful section of the Uddhava Gita. Uddhava Gita means a song sung to Uddhava. Now, Krishna's teachings to Uddhava, just as we have Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's speaking to Arjuna on the battlefield. So we have Uddhava Gita, which deals with many of the same subjects, but he goes into them often in greater detail. So now he's speaking about the process of the transmigration of the soul and the development of the body and the role that the mind plays in this. It's very fascinating and illuminating. So he gives various analogies here. He's spoken in the previous verse, or verse 41, about the dream, how the body and our whole life, actually, each time we have a new body, we have seems like a new life. The soul, we don't remember the previous life, we have no idea of the future life, and we take this particular life we're in, the particular incarnation, as all in all. But it's no more substantial. It's no more substantial than the dream we had last night. The only difference is that the dream lasts, I don't know, an hour or less in the at night. And this dream lasts, you know, during our waking time. You know, we're identifying with it. So it seems to be real. But in this section here, Krishna is explaining how it's not real. It's not real in the sense that we think it is. Just like a dream is real, it has effects on you. You can be afraid, you can be excited, you can be bemused, whatever, in the dream. And you take it to be the reality when you're in it. But when you wake up, those emotions subside, and you realize, oh, it's just a dream. It's not real. Now I have to go to my real life, my work, vacation, whatever it is, whatever I do during the day. You see? And in during that day, there are various ups and downs, emotions, fears, right? You may feel physical pain, emotional pain. You may feel physical joy, emotional joy, whatever it may be. There's a whole bunch of things that go on during the day, and that's your real life, you know. But here, Krishna is explaining how it's not really our real life. It's simply a grand illusion. Grand illusion. So let's look at these two verses. So the first verse, 43, which we chanted together, has to do with the way that time moves everything. Time is very powerful. We cannot see it. We can see its effects, but we don't see how it's working. But it's called a vegena. It's a force. It's a speedy force, and it's inevitable. Krishna identifies himself as time. Three times in the Bhagavad Gita. Kala kaliyatamaham, he says in the 10th chapter. Of controllers, I am time. And in the 11th chapter, he says, kalosmi loka chayakut pravidho, that I, as time, a time I am. It's a time I am, and I've come to destroy everything. So the force of time gradually brings everything to destruction. Now you can also say yes, it also brings things to fruition. So there's a series where something comes into being, just like our body. All of us took birth at one point, right? And gradually we're growing, and we're developing. The physical body develops, and the mind also, the subtle body develops. It's so many things you learn in those first 5 years. The psychologists say you learn more in those first 5 years than you learn the rest of your life. How to talk, how to walk, so many different things. And also the physical body is changing. So there's birth, there's growth, and then there's sustenance. There's a period of time where you're living nicely and normally producing byproducts, namely children. And then there's that inevitable downside to the graph, where you start to diminish in your strength, in your energy, and your memory, and all kinds of things diminish. And eventually, some disease comes, and inevitable death is staring you in the face, and boom, you're gone. And that whole body, and all the memories, and the mind that you have, is lost. That's explained earlier. You forget everything. You know, if you learn something, right? Suppose I'm a physicist. I learn. You know, a great effort. I go through high school, I go through college, graduate school, I study, I learn, and then I know physics. I can teach it, I can write books, I can use it in things. And then you get bonked on the head, and you forget everything, or you get Alzheimer's. What happened to all that physics? It's gone. All that knowledge is gone. You know? This is the scary thing about Alzheimer's. It's become more prominent. Is that the very person you knew is leaving, you know, before your eyes, right? Is your mother, and after a while, she may know your name, but she's forgetting all signs of things, and eventually doesn't know your name, doesn't know who she is. So where's the person? The body's there, but the memory's gone, and the person is no longer there. The person you knew, all the familiar things. So now just project that a little bit further as death. Death exactly means that. You forget everything. You take on a new identity, new friends, new parents, new environment, new everything. Even a new species sometimes. So what's the meaning at that point of your previous identity? Doesn't mean anything. You don't know about it. No one knows that this person was that person. You know, everything changes. It's just going through. So this is how time works. The bodies come into being and they go out of being. Just like, as the analogy is given, you know, the waves of a river or the waves in the ocean. They come together, right? Like this, since I've been here 22 years, who knows how many millions and billions of waves have hit this shore. You know, every moment of every day, they're coming, you know. And in those waves, you have little bubbles coming, right? Little foam and bubbles. So it's described how the body and our family members and friends and all the relations we have are just like those bubbles coming together in the waves for a few seconds, you know? And then boom, you know, the wave hits, the bubbles are gone, you're separated forever. It doesn't exist anymore. It's important to have this perspective on this material life because it's really like that. Maya or illusion makes us think that those things which are temporary, illusory, ephemeral, unimportant, are the most important things. This is what we should put our attention on, and our energy, our desire, our you know, fears should be focused toward all of this stuff that we're going on here. You know, rather than what's really important, the self, the eternal self, the reality. Very beginning of Gita, second chapter, Nasato vidite bhavo, na bhavo vidite sataha. Know that one. Na asato vidite bhavo. So for the asat means the temporary, the body, all the relationship, everything we're talking about here. There's no real existence. There's no ultimate existence. Na asato vidyate bhavo. It is understood by the sages. Krishna's quoting, you know. He's the greatest sage, but he does that sometimes. It's known by those who understand the nature of both the temporary and the permanent, that of the asat, the body and everything connected to it, there's no ultimate existence. And na bhavo vidyate sataha. For the sat, meaning the soul, the supreme soul, everything spiritual, Krishna's spiritual world, and all of that, there is no non-existence, means that there is eternal existence. That's the real. That's why it says, you know, this famous injunction, call from the Upanishads, the Vedas, asatoma tadgamaya, you know, or sadgamaya, asatoma sadgamaya. Don't stay in the temporary, go to the eternal. In other words, go there with your intelligence. Investigate. That's the meaning of human life. Tato Brahma Jigyasa. The Brahma means the Sat, this eternal spirit. It says, one, having come to the human form of life, which we have the chance with the intelligence, investigate in the Brahman, the eternal reality, the ground of being, the source of everything, the spiritual, the Sat. So, but ordinarily, Krishna's describing here the ordinary course of life. Close the door. They're going nuts out there. Constantly, these bodies are coming into being and going out of being, but we can't see that. The illusion is to identify, even in one lifetime, with the situation you're in now. You know, this is like you see young people, they're operating on the platform that they'll always be that age, more or less. All right, maybe I'll get to be 18, 20, but not really. You know, 30. Well, I remember when in hippie days, don't trust anyone over 30. You know, as if we'll always be young hippies, you know, dancing around with flowers in our hair. And those old people, hello. I was in that time. And we were thinking like that. There are the oldsters and there are the youngsters, and it'll never be that way. It doesn't work that way. I mean, it's obviously wrong, but we're actually living like that. They're like children. They have no idea, you know, they don't think, oh, I'm going to be an adult sometime. They're just working, I'm 8 years old, I want this, I want that, this is, you know. So this is what Krishna is describing here in text 43, that time, the inevitable force of time, which is moving everything, is pushing everyone forward to ultimate destruction. Now, in text 44, he gives these analogies. In text 45, he continues with it. It's very interesting. So the different stages of transformation. So he gives the example of a candle and the river and the fruits of a tree. So the potency for flame, you know, is there in the candle, right? But it's not manifest. Just like the potency for birth. I know you get a young man, young woman, there's a potency for a body, you know, a birth to take place, a child. But it's not manifest yet. It doesn't exist anywhere. But by the combination of man and woman, potency, if there's potency is there, and fertility, the body will come into being. And then it has these various stages of development. Because as soon as you, as soon as the soul is in the body, then is bound by time. But anything that's created is bound by time. It has a certain stages, you know. And so it grows, as I explained, and develops. And then eventually will pass out of existence. Now, the problem for the soul, for the self, is that in the conditioned state, we identify with the changing body. But deep down inside, intrinsically, we know that we're eternal. We know that we're full of bliss. We know that we're full of knowledge. But that first thing is eternal. So the idea of change and the idea of diminishment and death is foreign to the soul. So we reject that. And we identify with whatever stage we're in, whatever body we're in. And we act on the illusion that this is permanent. And the proof of that is that we try to make a permanent solution here to these problems. And, people, this whole thing with housing, you know, which has become such a nightmare in America and all over the world, really, but mostly in America, is that the dream, you know, the American dream, part of it is to have your own home, you know, so that no one can evict you, you know. You have your home with the picket fence, you have an illusion, you know, like that's where I can permanently stay and be happy, you know, and I'll have a family and things will go up there. So many people, they want to have that, you know, and understandably so, because otherwise you feel my situation is temporary. I have to rent here. What happens if, you know, I can? So you want to have your own home. But in order to have your own home, you don't have, you know, $400,000, $300,000, whatever it was back in 2005, 2006, before the prices collapsed. But I want to have this dream. So I'll borrow. I'll get a mortgage. And they're so eager to give you a mortgage, right? Even though you can't afford one in those days, because they had a big scam going on. So now you're in your house, and you have your job, you know, and you're paying your mortgage. And you feel, I've arrived. I've got my own house, right? Is that illusory or what? You don't have anything. You know, the bank owns it. You're a slave to try to pay that mortgage every month, which simple people, they sign on the bottom line. The small print says, yes, nice introductory, you know, mortgage, 6%. And then 2 years later, it comes up to 15%, you know. So the dream collapses. In other words, what you thought was a permanent situation is not permanent. And even horrors of horrors, you find yourself out on the street with your family, which you started because you thought you had a house, you know. This is Maya. This is a perfect indication of Maya. She asked you to invest your energy, your attention, your hopes in the temporary. But it's a losing investment. You put all your life into it. You put your energy into it. You put your attention into it. Your intelligence, you know. But ultimately, what do you get? Nothing. Mrityu sarva hadaschaham, Krishna says, as death, I take it all away. And even before death, so much is taken away. So many disappointments. You know, love, I'll love you forever, we'll live happily ever after. Yes, it's a fairy tale. All the fairy tales end with that when I was a kid. You know, we read nice fairy tales. And they lived happily ever after. So many dangers. But what happens after the last page in the fairy tale is turned on? There's no happily ever after in this world. So this is what Krishna is talking about here. He wants us to understand the temporality of this world. And in the next verse, I'll go ahead because this is so illuminating. There's all that you see a flame, right, of a candle. Visualize that. But moment by moment, there's a different fire there, right? The fuel is burning. And the flame that was there 2 seconds ago is no longer the same flame. It's maybe more obvious with a river. Go to the bank of a river. Oh, there's the Mississippi River. But whatever Mississippi River was there yesterday is not there anymore. It's all flown down, you know, probably all of it into the sea, into the Gulf, excuse me, the Gulf of Mexico. But there's the river. What is that river, really? It's just like this material body. It's a place where there's like a vortex, where water gathers, right, from all kinds of tributary streams, whatever, maybe, you know. And then it flows down there, but we're thinking, oh, there's the Mississippi River. But that water that we pointed to is now down there, you see. Similarly with our own body, you know. Who is Bhishma Dev? Well, we know Bhishma Dev is the soul in the body. But ordinarily people say, oh, Bhishma, yeah, I know Bhishma. He's so tall, he has this face, you know, he wears orange. But that Bhishma Dev is no longer there from yesterday. it slightly changed. So many cells have died and so many cells have taken birth, you know. So it's similar, that's how this whole world is. It's constantly changing. It's never steady like this. The only thing that's steady, known as the kutastha, that which is firm, is the soul. Soul never changes. Never moves, really. That's another interesting idea that we'll get into someday. And so all of this matter is just we're like a vortex. We're bringing in earth, water, fire, ether, breathing it out, excreting air, breathing water is coming in, going out, right? Thoughts are also changing constantly. So Krishna consciousness means to begin to identify with the eternal, with what is eternal. And it's not just that we're spirit and we're eternal, but we have a whole spiritual identity. And there's the Supreme Spirit with the Supreme Spiritual World, which is the actual real world of which this is a reflection or a shadow. That's the idea. And Krishna consciousness means to focus, to take our senses under the control of the purified intelligence and fix it on Krishna and act in such a way, use all our active senses, our voice, our eyes, everything, to connect to that spiritual reality. So that we begin to see this world for what it is and understand our actual position in this world, the reality. And live in that reality. Because Maya is always tempting us to throw the curtain over again, to go to sleep, to try to live for the moment and the pleasure of these senses, or even of this mind. But that is a trap. It's a trap. I like to chant this verse. Many of you heard it before, but it's very illuminating. Kama dinam katina katita palita durni deshas. Tesham jata maina katanana tupano pashanti. This is a verse by a great devotee named Madhavendrapuri, quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita when Lord Chaitanya is teaching Sanatana Goswami. And this is the situation of the conditioned soul, is that we have very many bad masters, enemies really. They've breached the gate. They're in the fortress. We're going to be reading this in the third chapter. I encourage you all who can possibly finish your rounds and your duties during the day and come to Bhagavad Gita class. Because we're in the third chapter. When we get to the end of the chapter, it's all about lust and how lust is the real enemy. And his friends, anger, fear, illusion. It all starts with lust, material desire, but it develops into these others. They demand us. Talk about Vega. Krodha Vega. First verse of the Upadeshamrita. It's a force of anger. If that takes over your heart and your consciousness, then you lash out, you hit something, you do something you maybe wouldn't do in your ordinary consciousness. And kill someone, go to jail, manslaughter. You know? Well, we have to watch out for anger. And the precursor of anger, lust. The more you can be peaceful and not overwhelmed with material desire, then you won't be troubled by anger. No lust, no anger. You know? So anyway, he describes how these kama, din, kama, etc., lust, anger, greed, etc., these have been my cruel masters birth after birth, forcing me to do something. Sex impulse, eating impulse, this, different things, all under the, you know, kama, etc. So they've been forcing me, yes, do this, go here, do this. And I've been following the orders. But they haven't been, they're not my friends. And no matter how much I serve them, they're never satisfied. They never show any mercy to me, nor that they ever, you know, I don't want to give them up. So how can we give them up? The intelligence. Utsrijaitam. Now he's saying, I'm throwing them away. I'm not going to listen to these demands anymore. Why? Atayadapate sampratam labna buddhi. Because I attain my real intelligence. In other words, by hearing the Shastra, by understanding, placing one's mind on it, trying to understand, repeating, in other words, associating with the great sages and with Krishna himself through these books, the sound vibration. So now he's attained the higher intelligence, so he's throwing them away. But if that's all you do, they won't stay away because we're conditioned souls. We're habituated to this and we have to have interaction, relationship, and pleasure. So therefore, the last line says, Tvamaya, I'm approaching you, O Krishna. And begging you, please engage me in your service. We're either going to serve these masters, you know, cruel lust and horrible anger and insatiable greed. You know, they're almost like persons demanding. It's like some, you know, they say the monkey on your back, you know, these addicts. You ever hear that phrase? Everyone knows it, right? You got a heroin addict, you got the monkey on your back. It's just like that. What's the monkey doing? He's beating you over the head. Go here, get the drug, you know. I want to get that monkey off my back. So we have many monkeys, you know, who are on our back, who are in our mind, who are in our heart, in our senses. It's described right in the third chapter. So the only way to get them off our back and the only way to get free from their demands is to transfer our consciousness to Krishna. Krishna consciousness, the service of Krishna, devotional service, with all of our being. What is that? We got the senses, we got the mind, we got the voice, right? We got the heart. All of everything has to be connected to Krishna. And then those cruel masters, they leave us. They can't do anything. Those are Maya's agents, they can't do anything. So that's the only alternative. Otherwise, we'll be impelled by this vega. Here he's talked about the time as this swift force or, you know, impulse. So there are so many things pulling at us, so many things that we've developed over the years, conditioning, and that will control us. This is the only way to overcome it. But it is there. Lord Chaitanya has come, given the best means, Harinam Sankirtan. When there is a kirtan going on, if you can at all attend, please do with your full mind and heart and enthusiasm. That purifies the whole being, the intelligence, the body, the mind, the senses. Everything is engaged in this Harinam Kirtan in relation to Krishna. It is the Yuga Dharma. Don't neglect it. And from that, everything will flow. You become interested in, you know, fascinated by these books. You have to be fascinated by this stuff. They're page turners, you know, because it's giving you reality. So that's my request to all of you. Okay, I'll read the verse, translations again. We had two verses. My dear Uddhava, material bodies are constantly undergoing creation and destruction by the force of time, whose swiftness is imperceptible. But because of the subtle nature of time, no one can see this. The different stages of transformation of all material bodies occur just like those of the flame of a candle, the current of a river, or the fruits of a tree. Any comments, questions? Yes, we will.
Thank you for that.
Hare Krishna. Glorious Brahma.
So with the body is always changing like this, it seems like it's almost like an attractive thing. Like you're like it's like you're always looking for, you know, like mode of passion, you're always looking forward to something else. And yet we hear that in the spiritual world there isn't change. Correct? So I'm just curious if you can elaborate on those seeming...
Yes, things. Yes. The question was that it's kind of an attractive thing. There's always new changes coming. But in spiritual we find that there's no change to your body. So don't you get bored with it after a while? Okay. So, first of all, the change of the body is sometimes highly desired. If you, again, project back to your childhood, you know, 7-year-old has a 9-year-old brother. You know how that is. You know, he's bigger than me. He can beat up on me. You know, he can do so many things I can't. If he has a bicycle, I don't. You know what I mean? I want to be 9. I'm not 7 anymore. I'm just 7 1/4. You know, I mean, like that. You remember when you were a kid? I'm 7 1/2. You're only 7. I'm 7 1/2. So the kids generally want to get older, right? You want to be older. And then when you're 17, all right, when I get to be 18, I can drink, you know, I can whatever, I don't know, whatever, you know. So, but that's a two-edged sword, you know. Certainly when you're 50, 51 is not so hot, you know, what to speak of 60. Forget the birthdays, no more birthday parties, you know. You don't want to even try to hold back on the aging. And change itself is not attractive. You know, change can be change for the worse. I mean, you know, you're even in children, you break your arm, that's a change, not very good. You're waiting for the time when you can get the cast off. So it's not change that's attractive. It's variegatedness of experience, you know, in which the variegatedness is all involved with things that are pleasurable. And that's what's there in the spiritual world. There's no 2 days that are the same. There's no 2 moments that are the same. One of the things about, you know, the holy name that we should understand, it's ever fresh. What is it? There's a verse like that. Anyway, there's so many verses. Yadavadi mamacheta krishna pada adavinde nava nava dasadaman yuditam rantamasi. Yamunacharya says that ever since I've been experiencing newer and newer varieties of pleasure in the service of Krishna's lotus feet, even sex life appears disgusting to me. I'm not desiring that. You can imagine how pure that is. So everything about Krishna is ever fresh. This is why we're repeating again and again. But every one of us knows, if you get a little bit of concentration, you quiet the mind a little bit, and you actually hear the holy name, it's not hackneyed. You know, it's like every name is pleasurable, isn't it? So the great devotees who are completely fixed on the holy name in love, it's the same name, Hare Krishna, Rama, you know, the sound is apparently the same. But it has unlimited varieties of new experience for you. This is spirit. This is the spiritual level. And therefore, every day, you know, in Bhagavatam, we just get a little hint of the pastimes of Krishna. You know, it's so many times it's described. Even Lord Ananta, with his millions of mouths, is glorifying Krishna from the beginning of time, can't come to the end of describing his pastimes. Or Lord Chaitanya's, you know, experiences in one kirtan. So, yes, we have the same body, but the different ways in which we serve Krishna, how you dress yourself to go out, maybe you're a cowherd boy, you know, the tunes Krishna's playing, the games you're playing, the different so-called demons that appear, you know, and how he kills them each day. There's unlimited variety. And so it's you're satisfied with your sarup, and this is your sarup. And it's a body of Satchidananda, Vigraha, full of bliss and knowledge. So what we're hankering for in this life is to attain that ideal situation, you know, where we'll be at the perfect age with the perfect mate in the perfect environment, you know, perfect. Sorry, it doesn't happen that way. Even the heavenly planets, you can live millions of years, it's not permanent. Anyone else? Any comments? Okay. So, it's 8:30, but since we usually go over, and maybe breakfast will probably be a little later, so let's review, now that we should review some of our morning program. And we'll review the first verse of what we used to call samsara prayers. It's called Guru Vashtika. We have the word guru, that U becomes a V when the next word begins with a vowel. So it's Guru Ashtaka means Guru Ashtaka. Ashtaka means eight. Eight verses. So we sing it every morning. Those of you who come to Mangalarti, I think we're all there this morning. So the very first words, Samsara Dava Nala Lidha Loka Tranaya. That's the first concept presented in. So samsara means? Yeah, just birth and death. That's samsara is life in this material world. Ever changing. Samsara. And characterized by birth and death. Earth, old age, disease, and death. So, Dava Nala. Ryan? Any idea what that means? Dava. Anala. Boomer, Apo. Anala. Vayu? Anyone?
Fire.
Forest fire, especially. Like Vrindavan. So there's a forest fire. Now, if you're in a forest fire, it's a very dangerous situation. Frightening. Right? Suppose all of a sudden you're in the forest and it starts fire and you're surrounded. You're helpless. Very frightening. That's the situation we're in. Birth and death, it's like that. Samsara Dhavanala. Try to remember these words. Samsara Dhavanala. Lidha. The Lidha means suffering. The suffering of being in the forest fire of samsara, of birth and death. That's an accurate painting of this world. It may look like a nice day today, but overall it's a forest fire. Now who's suffering? Loka.
Yeah, people.
The people. All of us. Loka means the people in the planet, or it means the planet itself. Just like Goloka means the planet of the cows. Krishna's, there's a lot of cows there, so it's called Goloka Vrindavan. So, or it means the people on the planet. So, the people on this planet, that includes us, are suffering, Lida, in this forest fire of birth and death. But this is a prayer to the spiritual master, the guru. He is Tranaya. Any idea what that means, Bhakta Carlos? Tranaya. So is the spiritual master making it worse? No. So what is he doing? Saving us. Saving us from it. That's the first thing. First idea. So, and karunya ganaganatvam. So, the suffix tvam means having the nature of ganagana, a thick cloud full of mercy. The rain that's in that cloud is the mercy. So it's just the perfect analogy. How can you be saved in the forest fire? If there's no firemen around, you're out in the middle of nowhere, big cloud pours down the rain, and you're saved. Then at that point, you'll thank the cloud. So we should feel thankfulness, gratefulness. That's the first emotion that we should feel in the morning when we sing that praise. We're looking at the deities, looking at Prabhupada, understanding all gurus, teachers. They've saved us. We've been saved. A small group, you know, of accepting that mercy. The mercy comes in the form of the holy name and the instructions and everything else. So that's the first two lines. We'll just deal with those. I'll go over the words once again and then we'll break. Sangsara dava nala lida loka. So sangsara dava nala means sangsara dava anala.
Cycle.
Yeah, the cycle of birth and death, which is just like a blazing forest fire. And lida means, what's happening with lida? Starts with an S. Yes, suffering. Okay, suffering. And who's suffering? The loka. You remember? The people. Very good. Tranaya. To be delivered. You know, tranaya is a word that means to be delivered. Just like tarine is another form of the word. Nirvishesha shunyavadi paschacha desha tarine. Srila Prabhupada is saving the Western lands, paschacha, from the horrors of impersonalism and voidism. We'll get into that another day. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.